The first Judges, chapter 51. Have you heard it? We must go to Shechem. Someone just came to tell us. Will you also go along? Of course, I want to be there too. There they all go, thousands and ten thousands of Israelites. They go to Shechem from all sections of the land. Shechem is a city in the center of the country near Shiloh. It is a city which lies in the possession of Ephraim. The village of Shiloh they knew, yes, and they went there three times a year, and there they celebrate the great feasts, namely the Passover, Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. However, this time they are not going to Shiloh, but to Shechem. What must they do there? Ah, Joshua, their brave leader, has called them. They have already lived in Canaan for several years, each on his own portion of land, and each in his own house. Joshua also has been permitted to enjoy a few years of rest in Canaan. He is very old, and now he feels that he will not live too long anymore. But before he dies, he would like to bid farewell to all the people. When Moses bid farewell, it was much easier, for the people lived close together, living in tents. This time it was different, for the Israelites were scattered all over the entire land. Still, Joshua wanted to see them all together once more. Will the people again leave their homes and come together this extra time? Of course. For them this would be a pleasure. See the roads to Shechem. They are filled with people walking toward that city. Soon almost an innumerable mass of people is standing together, waiting to hear Joshua. Finally, Joshua stands up. His voice is still clear and distinct. I will not be in your midst very long anymore, for I have become very old, and I will soon die, he begins. And therefore I have called you together to say goodbye. He also reminds the people that thus far the Lord has been with them. He tells them of the many wonders which God had done for them, how they were delivered out of Egypt, led through the Red Sea, and safeguarded in the wilderness. He also tells them, for they must never forget it, how the Lord helped them in the great battles against the Canaanites, how the walls of Jericho fell down of themselves. He speaks about the conquest of Ai, the battle against the five kings, yes, too many to name them all. Once again, all these wonders of God's faithfulness are told by Joshua. It is very quiet while Joshua speaks. They nod with their heads as though they would say, yes, yes, so it is, so it happened. You now live in houses, Joshua continues, which you did not build yourself. You eat grapes from the vineyards which you did not plant. The Canaanites who are dead built your houses and planted your vineyards, and you are reaping the fruits of their labors. Again he is silent for a moment. He gives the people a moment's time to think about the many wonders bestowed upon them by their God. Fear and serve the Lord, he cries at last, and if you do not want to serve the Lord, take another god. Take the gods of the Canaanites or the Egyptians. Serving both together does not go. You cannot serve God and the idols. That is impossible. You must choose one or the other, the Lord or the idols. Choose you this day whom ye will serve. Why did Joshua say that? Didn't the Israelites worship the Lord? Alas, many worship the Lord, but they also worship the idols. They worshiped both, and that doesn't go. Therefore, Joshua said, choose. Choose whom ye will serve. Joshua has made his choice. Listen to what he says. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. For a short time it is breathlessly quiet. The Israelites have become deeply impressed by his words. They are ashamed because it is true what Joshua says. Other gods, idols, are already being worshipped in Israel. At this time, the people make a choice. They answer Joshua, we too will serve the Lord, just the same as you. We will not serve any idols, but we will serve the Lord only. Joshua hears the answer, but still he will let them feel that they cannot do it in their own strength. He says, oh, you cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. If you are really sincere, show it by putting the strange idols from your midst. Yes, we mean it, the people cry. We will do as you say. That day Joshua made a covenant with the people, and the Israelites solemnly promised that they would not forsake the Lord. Then the people returned, each to his own home. Soon after this, Joshua died. He entered the heavenly Canaan. No wars or troubles are there, neither sorrow nor pain. There Joshua will sing forever and ever to the honor of that God whom he already served while upon this earth. He was 110 years old when he died. Happy Joshua! O children, are you not jealous? This serious admonition also comes to you. Who do you serve? Do you serve the world, sin, and the devil? Or do you serve the Lord? Neither are you able to serve the Lord unless you receive a new heart from him. Are there any among you who want to serve both God and the world? That can't be done. That is impossible. Therefore, this is also called to you, choose you this day whom ye will serve. May the Lord give that you may make that same choice as Joshua did. It is a choice which you will never regret. Years go by. They fly away. Joshua has been dead many years, and the elders who lived with Joshua also have died. And the Israelites do not do what they had so solemnly promised when Joshua had bid them farewell. They forsook the Lord and began to serve the idols of the Canaanites who still lived in the land. They copied these idols and bowed themselves before these dead stone images. Canaanites? Weren't they all defeated and slain? Yes, many were, but not all. When they, under the leadership of Joshua, had conquered enough land for the present time, the Lord said, now you may rest for a while. You may stop fighting for now. Later, when Joshua is dead, you must again begin to fight the Canaanites. Now Joshua was dead, But they did not do what God had commanded. They did not begin to fight the Canaanites. Oh no, they did not want to. They thought, let the Canaanites live quietly, for they do not give us any trouble. We will be sure to remain their master. So doing, they were disobedient to the command of the Lord. Yes, worse, when they saw the idols of the Canaanites which still remained, they began to copy them. They began to honor these stone images as gods, and they forsook the living God, the God of heaven and earth, their God. As a result, it didn't go well with them. It couldn't go well. When they didn't want to serve the Lord, not even willing to walk outwardly in the ways of the Lord would not help them. War came. That was the punishment. Foreign soldiers enter into their land. Foreign soldiers eat their wheat, which they had planted. Foreign soldiers pick the grapes, which they had planted and cultivated. The sheep and cows, which they had reared, are stolen from the pastures by these foreign soldiers, and they eat them. That was very grievous. These foreign soldiers came from faraway Mesopotamia. These enemies stole and plundered everything for 8 long years. The Israelites became poor as can be. They began to regret that they had forsaken God. The strange idols, the stone images, they broke into pieces. They again bend their knees before the God of their fathers, before the God of Joshua. Each night and each morning, they bowed down themselves and entreated, O Lord, help us. Deliver us from the king of Mesopotamia. We have sinned. Lord, forgive us. When the Israelites called to the Lord heard and helped them, for the Lord is long-suffering and patient. A man lived among the people by the name of Othniel. He was a brother of Caleb, the man who had spied the land with Joshua. Othniel called the Israelites together, gathered an army, and went to battle against the hostile army. God gave the victory. The foreign soldiers were driven from the land. Their king, Cushan-Rishathaim, had to flee, and he didn't dare return. Israel again was free. Oh, they were so thankful. The Lord had given deliverance. Othniel now governed the people. Such people they called judges. So Othniel was the first judge. But Othniel died. Every person must die. We too, boys and girls. Do you ever think of that? When Othniel was dead, the Israelites forgot the Lord and again began to serve idols. Wasn't that ungrateful? You can readily understand that the Lord was angry about that, and he would punish the Israelites. War came again. Now the Moabites became their enemies, and they conquered the land where the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh lived. Yes, they even crossed Jordan and began to live in the city of Jericho. Their king was named Eglon. The Israelites had to give Eglon the best wheat which they had cultivated, and also the best and fattest cows. They didn't do this willingly, but they were forced to do it. Many thousands of Moabitish soldiers marched through the land, and they looked all around. Woe to the farmer who did not give the fattest cows, he would be slain. Oh, how the Israelites hated to do this, but they didn't dare refuse. The Moabites ruled over them for 18 years, and during these 18 years they had to give the enemy their best fruits. However, the Israelites began to repent because of their foolishness. They prayed to God and asked him if he would help them, if he would deliver them. And the Lord is so good, for he heard and answered their prayer. Each year after the harvest, a few Israelites had to bring the cows and the fruits to Jericho, to Eglon, the king of the Moabites. See the Israelites again walking for the 18th time to Jericho. They drive the herds of cattle before them. They come to Eglon. He sits upon his throne and smiles. He thinks, "Let the Israelites work hard for us. We become rich, and they become poor." He looks over what they have brought, nods, and says, "It is good. You may go again." The Israelites, who really have become servants, slaves of the Moabites, return homeward. When they come to the boundary of the city, one of them says, "You walk on. I am going back because I forgot something." Behold, there he returns all alone. This man is Ehud. He again enters the royal palace. Eglon, the king of Moab, looks bewildered and asks, "For what reason have you come?" "King," answers Ehud, "I must tell you something secretly." Several Moabitish soldiers stood by the king. They had to serve and protect the king. "Wait a minute," Eglon says to Ehud, and he sends all his soldiers from the room. When the door is shut behind the last one, and the king with Ehud remain alone in the room, the king says as he stands up, "Tell it now, for no one can hear us." Ehud bends forward as if he would whisper something in Eglon's ear. "Oh, look." Quickly, Ehud grabs a sharp sword with his left hand, which he secretly had hidden under his clothing. He quickly stabs Eglon the king dead with his sword. He then walks calmly from the room, shuts and locks the door, and leaves the palace. When he is out of the city, he begins to run swiftly. The Moabitish soldiers who saw Ehud leave try again to enter the room, but find the door locked. "Shh," they say to each other. "The king must have locked the door. Probably he wishes to rest." They wait and wait. Hours go by. Finally, they become worried. They knock on the door, but receive no answer. They pound and hit the door with their fists. They cry and call loudly, "King, get up." Still, there is no answer. Finally, they open the door with a key and shrink back in terror. There lies their king, dead. He has been murdered. In the meantime, Ehud has gone a great distance. The Moabites can no longer overtake him. Ehud now calls the Israelites together. We read in the Bible that he blew a trumpet. This was the sign that they must assemble themselves. Soon he has a large army together. He quickly marches with his army to Jordan. By so doing, the Moabitish soldiers cannot return to their own country. All of them are slain by the Israelites. 10,000 Moabites are struck down by the Israelites and lose their lives. The children of Israel are again free, and they are again master of their own land. The Lord has given deliverance. Ehud, the second judge, has been used for that purpose. Something else is recorded in God's word about a third judge. Come, let us read together what is said of him. And after him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel. It is recorded there so simple, but how much is contained in that one verse? It says to us that the Philistines oppressed Israel. The Philistines entered into their land and subjected the Israelites. That is bad, isn't it, when the enemy comes into the land? The Israelites are no longer free, but the Philistines make the roads unsafe, and they steal and plunder everything they see. But when the Israelites again returned to the Lord and entreated him to deliver them from their enemies, the Lord heard their prayers. The Lord would send deliverance, not by a whole army, but by one man. The Lord used Shamgar for that purpose. Behold, an army of the Philistines again marched through the land of the children of Israel. Suddenly, a man approaches them with a stick in his hand, a common ox goad. What is Shamgar going to do? Is he going to fight? Isn't that foolishness itself? Can one man fight against a whole army? Yes, it seems very foolish, and we would say so too, wouldn't we? But the Lord gives Shamgar strength and courage. Probably the Philistines ridiculed and laughed, but they didn't do it long. They did their best to kill this one man, but they were not successful. The Lord protected Shamgar from that. He drove the Philistine army so that they fled, and 600 Philistines were slain by him. Then we read that Shamgar delivered the Israelites, which means that from that time the Philistines did not come into their land. Now, you must not think that Shamgar delivered his countrymen. No, he could never do that alone, but the Lord delivered Israel. The Lord protected Shamgar in the battle. God only must receive the honor, therefore. To that end, Shamgar was used as the third judge.